Mr. Dales, and the minutes are approved. And it looks like we're getting the PowerPoint ready for Commissioner Segrin and Mr. Melcher, if you want to come down leisurely, because it's not quite ready yet, it looks like. We see each other twice in one day. There were representative legislators of both parties that met with Commissioner Segrin and the governor this morning about education, so nice to see you again. I'm always glad when it's not me trying to figure out the technology. There it goes. Okay, thank you. All right, well, we had a little moment there, so for people who just came in, we have Commissioner Segrin and Michelle Weber, I guess, and Mr. Melcher is also here in the back. And we typically have the department come in for an overview at the beginning of the biennium, but this year we actually sent some questions ahead because we had some advice actually from former Governor Arne Carlson on how we could have better discussions with agencies and not just ask a million questions and get a million answers but not really come out with it, knowing exactly how the legislature should have better oversight and working together with agencies. And so so we sent out the questions that I believe the PowerPoint pretty well follows, and we'll go through them, and we are devoting the entire committee meeting to this. So if I think we'll have questions as we go along, and then we'll have time for hopefully discussion at the end as well. And we did go with what is the mission of the agency, the goals, and how does the budget line up with those goals, and how do they measure them, and kind of big picture things. This is not the time for little small questions. If you have things about your own districts and so forth, you can always work with the department about that. But this is kind of the big picture overview that the whole committee should be interested in. So we welcome Commissioner Segrin, and as you know, you need to identify yourself again for the tape and then go through. And if it's all right with you, we'll take questions as we go along.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I am Alice Segrin, the Commissioner of Education. Thank you, and actually, I really appreciated the questions that were submitted to us as an agency. It does give us an opportunity to kind of give a 101 of our agency budget and of our goals and our mission. A lot of times we don't talk about that, so I think these are very thoughtful questions, and I appreciate the opportunity to share those this information with you. On the first PowerPoint, as you can see, our agency mission is improve educational achievement by establishing clear standards, measuring performance, assisting educators, and increasing opportunities for lifelong learning. And as we go through the PowerPoint, you'll actually see that we try to organize, and we have organized our agency along that mission to implement those things. Our agency goals are to improve achievement for all students, enhance teacher quality, expand education options for students and families, and implement education finance reform and enhance accountability.
Mr. Siegert, before you continue on, the one question that I did not see answered here, but maybe you're going to talk about it, and it's just not in the PowerPoint, but that we would like you to answer at some point along the way, is for each one of those four goals, what portion of the agency's budget is assigned to each goal? That was one of the questions that I didn't see in here. So.
And Madam Chair, we can get to some of that. We probably didn't break it out. Some of the activities go across divisions, and so it's sometimes it's a little bit hard to just break out specific numbers or our finances to specific goals. But we will try to do that as much as we can for you on that.
Ms. Weber, and if you could state your name also.
Michelle Weber, Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education, and we also have Tammy McGlone here, the Director of our Administrative Services Division. And she does have backup information for you if you have specific questions about the different offices and funds that are available in them.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first goal that we want to talk about is improve student achievement for all students and kind of some of the history and then how we've moved forward with doing that. First of all, in 2003-04, the legislature and the administrative branch of the executive branch of the government agreed to repeal the profile of learning and implement rigorous academic standards that had more focus on content and not so much on just the process of education. And we did so, we implemented standards in reading, math, science, social studies, and arts. And so we are operating now under those new standards. And then we created more rigorous graduation requirements in 2006 along with the legislature with the charge that we would align our standards to college and career readiness. And so we are in the process of doing that. We've completed our math standards, which reflect Algebra 1 by the end of 8th grade, Algebra 2 to graduate. And then also we added the requirements have not changed in science. We still have 3 years, but in addition to biology that must be taken, students must either choose chemistry or physics in addition to graduate from high school. So you can see the process that we've established, and by we, I mean the executive branch and the legislative branch. I think that that has been a wonderful and strong working partnership as we have re-examined what we expect of our children, especially for this 21st century global economy that we're in. The assessments that are used to measure student achievement are varied. We have different kinds of things that we have looked at over time to see whether our children are progressing well. We have the MCA 2 assessments in reading, math, and science, and that is part of the to satisfy the No Child Left Behind legislation. Then recently, in 2007, we also had the request to look at TIMSS, which is the test of international math and science. And that was, we became our own nation, if you will, along with Massachusetts. We were the only two states in the nation that decided to take the TIMSS. The other countries in the world also do the same process where they have 4,000 of their students that are scientifically, it's a scientific sample of the students in that country, and we were our own country, if you will. And the TIMSS results were pretty fantastic. We'll talk a little bit about why and the analysis that is going on around the TIMSS so that it will inform us as we go forward with assessments and with instruction of our students. And then, of course, we also have the ACT that about 68% of our students take in the state. These are for students that are interested in going on to college, and it is an admissions test. And for the last 2 years, we have been number one in the nation, but we also want to dig into that information for you to also kind of put a little cautionary note behind our ACT results. We can see that in the MCA 2 summary results in math, that overall, from 2006 to 2008, we are making progress towards proficiency with our students. And if you look at the next graph, you can actually see that broken out by grade level. You can see the continual progress that we've made all the way through our grades. However, the caution that we have is that as we go from 3rd grade to 11th grade, the ability of for a lot of our students to maintain their proficiency does decline. We do believe that math is a subject area that gets more complex as you go through, but we also want to see those results go up over time in the high school. And we'll talk a little bit, I'd be glad to talk a little bit about some of our analysis of the TIMS and some of the, what our experts are saying and advice that they are giving us in regard to that. Then the next slide actually is just another graphic way of looking at our mathematics progress. And you can see that we have increased each year towards our proficiency. And the mathematics test does include a test for English language learners and also a test for our special ed students. So the MTEL is our English language learners test, and then our MTAS is our for special education, but they all reflect our standards at each of the grade levels and the expectations for those students. Then when you go to reading with our MCA2 results, again we see an increase overall in the students reaching proficiency. I want you to note in the year 2007 that we went down slightly, but that is because we had developed our test for emerging English learners, and the federal government did not approve that particular test, so we had to then take that out. So that's why you see a little bit of a decrease in 2007, because all of the ELL students had to take the MCA, but then it did go up the next year. So I just want to make a note of that, that it, you know, looks kind of like an anomaly there, but it was because tests were moving in and out of the process. Also, there is a note, and if you look down at the, if you go to the next slide, you can look at the reading progress over time. And if you note the grade 10 test results, you will notice a pretty substantial increase from 2007 to 2008. And that was because this is the first year that the GRAD, that was the next iteration of our old basic skills test, was embedded in the MCA2. And as a result, under motivated conditions, our students jumped 9 percentage points in their achievement results. That is why you see that large jump. And then again, you have the graph that shows the demonstration overall how our students are doing. Then I want to move to the TIMS. As I alluded to, in 2007, we became our own nation and participated in the TIMS. We had taken the TIMS test in 1995, and but unlike 1995, where we probably would say that our test results in 1995 were pretty mediocre, as well as the United States were pretty mediocre compared to other top-performing nations in the world. But in 2007, there was a totally different story. We became a state, or in a nation, if you will, that was probably up there in the top 4 or 5 in the world in our 4th grade. In 8th grade, it wasn't quite as good, but still very substantial improvement in our test results. And our 4th graders actually scored a half a standard deviation above the scale score, or scale average. And it was just below the 4 top countries in the world. In 8th grade, again, we had about 1/3 of a standard deviation above the TIMS scale average, but substantially below. And if you, and we'll look at kind of some boxes in a graph in a minute to kind of tell you about that. But one of the things that is really extraordinary is that we had a gain between 1995 and 2007 that was one of the largest gains ever recorded for the U.S. And actually, there were only a couple of other nations above us that made those kinds of substantial gains from 1995 to 2007. Some of the reasons for that is, particularly the fourth grade, This was given in 2007. Our fourth graders had the benefit of being completely under the standards that had been implemented in 2003. To me, we should have had a parade down Nicollet Avenue. This is a real compliment to our teachers, and it's a real compliment to our students that when you have focused content, teachers know what is expected of them to be taught. Our teachers deliver. Dr. William Schmidt is part of the National Council for the Teachers of Mathematics. He's also a professor at University of Michigan. He has come here and spoken to the legislature. In fact, he spoke, I think, 1 or 2 years ago, and we had a joint session where he did speak. He passed up a trip to Paris to come to Minnesota at the announcement of our TIMSS results. He was involved with the development of our new math standards, our third iteration, and he basically said this is real strong illustration of when you start focusing your standards, especially math, and they're not a mile wide and an inch deep, and teachers know what to expect, you will start to see real academic progress. And our eighth grade students did very well, but again, he said now the eighth grade students had a portion of those standards taught to them, not all. And I said, is that why the high school then, if you look at the MCA 2s, why there's a decline? And he said, precisely, and you're not alone as a state. Other states are also grappling with the same kind of phenomenon. But he said, if you stick with it, if you now make sure that you're going into a transition and support your teachers with their professional development, you will continue to see really some extraordinary progress over time. So stick with it. Don't back down on it. So to us, to me, to I think all of you, this should be a real validation of the support that you've had for high expectations for students, because all students can do this. And we need to I think really celebrate this. I think it's real good news for the state of Minnesota.
Something to very much celebrate, and we will be discussing in the policy committee. Eight of us serve on policy, but we had Representative Slocum's bill from last year, and I think we'll continue to discuss because of the problem you point out that the high school students didn't have what the fourth grade students got are getting. And what the eighth grade students got partially. So we know it can work and be successful, and we should be having bands in the street to celebrate it. But in the meanwhile, we don't want to have unintended consequences for high school students that didn't have all that. So we'll continue to discuss that, not now because this is finance, not policy. But I think you point out a real problem that the policy committee needs to grapple with this year. So thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to also reiterate, our high school students have had the benefit of some of the teaching also. But I think we, from the first iteration of our math standards to the series two, if you will, we had about 4 or 5 years of implementation time. And I think one of the things that we have corrected, and thanks again to the support, I think, of the legislature and the executive branch, to think more forward, if you will, about preparing our teachers for our next iteration with our math and science academies is going to really, really help as we go forward. But again, we do, and I did ask Dr. Schmidt that, as I had the opportunity to have him come in and share what we were grappling with the grad, and he said that he felt that we should have some transition period, but that we should then, really make sure that we're holding the line and making sure that we're moving forward with our new standards.
Thank you. Let's press on, though.
Okay.
This isn't the policy.
Sorry.
We want to talk about the finances, and I really would like to get some information this hearing, if we can, on the how much of our money we're spending for each of these categories, because we hear in this committee that there's questioning, especially in the time of deficit right now, that the department has gotten so focused on the testing, that the legislature, as you point out, has been supporting as well, but then districts say they can't get help with basic things because that has splashed out all the ability of the staff to do anything except for those tied up with federal compliance issues. So I would like to get to that question and stick with the finance issues.
Absolutely.
But there are eight of us here that will continue that discussion.
Yeah,
policy.
And I'll go through these then very quickly. The next graph actually just shows where our state was ranked in regard to the other top nations of the world. And you can see that we were right there. Three countries and us that were not significantly different from one another. And then you can see where we were in relationship to the top performing. So there are six or five above us, and we were ranked right after that. So I think it's still a tribute to what is happening in our state. And then you can see where the United States is. They're actually down quite a bit further. And our eighth grade mathematics, you can see a similar display, where we are kind of alone as far as there was nobody else significantly different, no other country, and then the numbers that were just right above us. And then you can see where the United States was significantly below us. So I think it is a point of pride that that we are doing well in math. Science, then, I will just talk a little bit about science. In 1995, we did very well compared to other nations of the world. And math and science, has said, and Dr. Schmidt agrees, that we think we had a loose network of science teachers that had kind of agreed to what our standards should look like for teaching science while we didn't have an official group of standards, and that's why we did so well. We did about the same as we did in 1995 with our science standards in 2007, but we're still ranked very high compared to other nations. We are in the middle of our revision of our new science standards, so we think that we've got highly capable science teachers, and I think we have nowhere to go but up, and we're highly achieving now. We'll go real quick to the grade 4 science. You can see again where we are. There's only two countries that are significantly above us, and then you've got the countries that are around us with their scores. You can see that very quickly. And then you can see the grade 8 science. Then I want to move to the ACT, just to reiterate that we remain number one in the nation, and that Minnesota students improved on ACT from 2007 to 2008 and showed higher growth when compared to the nation and other states. But if you dig down into the disaggregated data, you will also still see that we have an achievement gap, and that a number of our students that have high needs are not attaining as good. And then if you look on the next page, or the next slide, at the percent that are actually college ready, and you go down to the meeting all four column, or you go to the right-hand column where it says meeting all four, you will notice that only 32% of our students who do take the ACT actually score a significant score in all four categories to actually be what ACT considers college ready. So even though we are top in the nation, when you start digging down, we have some cautionary notes to make of that. And all of the columns, you can see that we beat the U.S. score, but even so, we need to make sure that we're not just accepting this as this is really fine. A lot of times I get the question, well, if we're doing so good in TIMS and we're doing so good in ACT, why aren't we doing so good in the MCA? And really, when you start digging down into the information, you're going to see a lot of other details that you should be asking yourself about. And then the average scores, this is where you get the composite score, the 22.6, if you look at the right-hand column in the last two rows. The 22.6, that was our composite score that we got, and that's the top score in the nation. Then we're also, of course, enhancing teacher quality. We have implemented the nation-leading QCOM program. We have 44 school districts and 25 charter schools that serve 255,000 plus students. And there will be an Office of the Legislative Auditor report out on February 3rd that you will, I'm sure, be very interested in. And it has some good suggestions for us, which we are going to implement, and it was very helpful for us. We also have about $3 million on the next page in the Teacher Math and Science Academies.
Mr. Sheehan, before you press on, one of our questions was that is the
the second bullet, if you could go back one slide here, there is the February 3rd report coming out from the Office of Legislative Auditor, and then there's also an evaluation being done by the Department of Education. You mentioned it cost $3 million. And, you know, last summer, I sent you this question ahead because we definitely didn't want to skip over it. Last summer, I have never received a letter like the one I received from Jim Nobles from the Office of Legislative Auditor to raise concern that the department was actually duplicating a study that the legislative auditor is already doing. And everywhere we go, when we've had the hearings on the new Minnesota Miracle, invariably it will come up that there's people out in the field who are sympathetic to the department not having enough staff, and even as they're saying, they can't do this, they can't do that, they're not a blaming crowd, they're a sympathizing crowd. They're asking us as legislators to do better with the department. And so hearing all of that, it really does concern me that there would be a second evaluation when we have such a respected Minnesota Office of the Legislative Auditor. And I've gotten the answer that they're doing different things, but considering that we all have a chance to ask the auditor what to do, legislators get to go in, you know, we all have a chance at the front end to say, cover this, cover that, and help them hone down the many things that they could do. I really seriously want to know, why did we spend this $3 million for a second study?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, we are not spending $3 million. We are spending $92,000.
So, Madam Chair, the $3 million is what the Office of Legislative Auditor is spending? I thought I heard you mention $3
million. I never mentioned $3
million. Where did I get that from?
Oh, that was for the Math and Science Academies.
Thank you,
Ms.
Weber. Okay. Yes. So, and it was $92,000, you said.
And let me,
and the letter actually was $187,000 now that I'm thinking about it, the one that came from the auditor, because I've repeated this to so many people since I got it several months ago that it has stuck in my head, temporarily displaced by the $3 million. $187,000, but whether it is that or $92,000, the question remains.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate your asking the question. And yes, Mr. Nobles did question our evaluation too. And first of all, I want to let the legislators know that we had decided to do an independent evaluation because we did have questions about the impact of QComp on student achievement and many other questions. So we had already contracted with Diesel to start doing an evaluation before the legislative auditor was requested to do an evaluation. There's some differences between the two evaluations. And actually, we've talked through this with Mr. Nobles, and you can certainly ask the question again when he is before you on February 3rd, but I think that he understands now, too. He raised the question with us, and we also then told him and assured him that we would not be duplicating the same things that he was looking at and researching, that we would be doing different things and asking different questions, and we would be very more than happy to actually even, we asked him if he would be willing to give information to the independent evaluator as he was finding things, and we've had a very cooperative conversation in regard to both of the evaluations. The one thing about the legislative auditor's evaluation is that it was really about the process of implementation of QComp. So there was a lot of questions about, you know, how did it initially start? How were the criteria set out? How was the legislation followed? What were all the processes that actually got set up for, such as the application process, for the review process, those kinds of things? So that is one of the things that they examined. What FISL is doing is actually looking at the effects of QComp. We are trying to actually drill down and say, in what ways do districts and states and schools statewide implement QComp? In what ways can similarities and differences of an implementation impact student achievement? So in other words, we've got lots of different plans the districts have devised. And are the differences in the plans, are they stronger or weaker? And can we draw some conclusions about student achievement? Are there pieces that jump out that are really effective So we're trying to analyze some of that in regard to student achievement. I can go through all of the different bullet points. I'm going to let you read them. But we also always intended to have an ongoing evaluation of UConn because we know it is something that is new and it is different and it's comprehensive, and we want to make sure that whatever we're doing here at the bottom line is helping support teachers and improve academic achievement of students. So we had all along set aside some monies to have an ongoing evaluation, and then the auditor's report came along. So I think, and I'm going to let Pat King maybe make some comments, because she worked closely with Mr. Noble in the process, and she can maybe give a little more information about, you know, how things developed after his concerns were expressed.
Yeah, okay, Ms. Kingsley. If you could state your name and title again.
Yes, Pat King, Director of School Improvement. And yes, as the Commissioner had mentioned, there were concerns at the beginning of the duplication of efforts between the two evaluations. And as the Commissioner stated, it has been the department's intent since the beginning of the program to have some an evaluation done. When I go out and do workshops or presentations or talk to districts around the state about QComp and the effects of the program, we haven't been able to give them any really good information. And so the question always is, so why QComp, and how does this make a difference? How can we see that it's making a difference? And so we need to make sure that if we're spending that state money, we need to make sure we're spending it wisely and effectively on a program that is making a difference. And so we're looking at this evaluation, and as the Commissioner said, it will be out February 3rd, and the HESL evaluation, the external evaluator, will be out on approximately January 30th, and so you'll have opportunities to make sure that you can read through each of them and look to see what's happening with. But I believe, at least our take on it, my take on it, is that you will see there are very profound differences between the two evaluations, and yet at the same time, the two evaluations will complement one another. And I believe with the information that we have, we'll be able to move forward with a much stronger and better program.
Thank you. Well, we will certainly ask Mr. Noble that as well. But I'm very concerned about it. It's a small amount of money in the grand scheme of the budgets, but $187,000 is $187,000. And in an era when we're talking about shared services, working together, not duplicating effort, it seems mighty odd to me that we would have two evaluations. And this, you keep mentioning an independent evaluation. You know, the legislative auditor's office is independent, and we value them for that. And it seems to me that if they had known you were doing it, maybe they would have picked a different topic. Or, you know, there should be some communication and coordination with layers of government. And even though they may be complementary, it still seems like a redundant expenditure when there are, you know, we have cut and zeroed out whole programs that we could have kept in, and they would have, maybe three or four of them fit in that amount of money. So considering that times are so tight, hopefully in the future we'll have better communication. And Representative Van Zelt, and then followed by Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, with only 44 school districts opting in to the QComp program, an obvious conclusion to this legislator is that this is not a universally loved innovation. Having said that, it isn't. I mean, the agreement on this committee is pretty fragile as well. And my only concern is that we don't end up in one of those typical dueling studies situation where the legislative auditor says one thing and pretty soon your study, your evaluation counters, and we go back and forth and we end up wasting a lot of time and the public gets further confused and superintendents get more and more distraught with what we're spending our time and money on. So I think the chair's questioning there is very valid.
Thank you very much. Representative Morgan, followed by Representative Tilbury, and then we'll get... Okay. If I didn't hear a question in there, so that's why I didn't pause for Commissioner Segrin.
Well, I did want to...
Commissioner Segrin, can we just hold on you and get Representative Morgan in here? Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Commissioner Segrin. I would urge both the Chair and the Commissioner to come, or the Chair to ask the Commissioner to come back. And Commissioner Segrin, I would ask that you would bring in the director or whoever oversaw this study from Hazel to ask them to come in. And I'm assuming that a complete and full description of the methodology of this study will be in the report. But it would be helpful to have whoever it was that conducted the study here so that we could ask questions about how they went about getting the information and analyzing that information. So that would be wonderful.
Commissioner Segrin.
Thank you to both of the legislators then. In regard to dueling evaluations, Representative Ansel, I don't think that you will find that they'll be dueling. Actually, I think they're going to be very complementary to one another. I think what Auditor Noble found, and then kind of the complementary questions that we were looking at are actually going to be very supportive of one another. We are not intending to try to have doing research or prove one thing or prove another. We wanted an independent evaluation, and Hazel is a recognized and respected evaluator. So we are trying to do our due diligence with this program because it is a new and very innovative and sometimes can be a scary to some people. In regard to your question as to why only 44 districts, you also will note that 255,000 students are now covered under that QCOM proposal. We are now have 10 more school districts that are in process of submitting applications to us. And one of the kind of, I think, concerns that our school districts have had is whether the financing would be there. Our intent has always been that we would scale it up and we would start because we knew that because it was such a new way of perform or providing professional development and doing the performance, et cetera, that it was going to take a while for school districts to understand and come up with plans. So we knew it was going to take some time. Our intent always has been that we would want to fully fund it and have every district have the opportunity to do QCOM. So we still have monies available, and we would hope that in the future that we would continue to scale it up. As we have a number of plans and examples out there, districts are getting more comfortable. They're also talking to one another, you know, those districts that are in QCOM and getting some feedback from that. So we're finding that it is becoming more and more supported and people are becoming more comfortable. Are there still concerns out there in the district? Yes, there are. And there always will be.
Because we don't want to take up all the time with QCOM. Representative Tilbury, and then we'll continue.
And then can I just answer Mr. Morgan's, Representative Morgan's question? Yes, and we will definitely want to share the evaluation with you and provide the analysis and everything.
Great. Thank you very much. Representative Tilbury.
Madam Chair, I do have a couple questions on the MCAs and then also the ACT stuff, so I'm looking for guidance on what to ask for.
Representative Tilbury, those would be policy questions. We're focusing, if you want to actually talk about...
there's a cost factor.
Okay, if it's cost, then you can ask the question. Representative Tilbury.
One of the questions that I had for Commissioner is, is there other tests other than the MCA that could be offered as some of the No Child Left Behind laws? And the reason that I ask that is my superintendent last night told me that two-thirds of the state looks at another test that may be more helpful to them. And then, of course, the cost that we have for the MCAs, and then if school districts are going ahead with another test to do it, that's total duplication, and I'm wondering why that one wouldn't be accepted. And then one more thought before I let you answer is, superintendent said that the only reason that other test wasn't wouldn't satisfy No Child Left Behind was because it needed commissioner's approval to be sent on. So I'm bringing it to you, and I think the initials or the acronym for it was the NUEA testing.
Representative Tilbury, that's definitely a finance question. And Commissioner Seeger, before you answer it, there are lots of legislators talking about, again, in this time of deficit, isn't there too much testing? Couldn't we substitute cheaper tests and that would actually be even more rigorous and so forth? So, Commissioner Seeger.
In the implementation of No Child Left Behind, states were instructed that they must create a summative test. That was a test that would test all children with the same test questions at the same time during a testing window. The test that you are referencing, the NWEA test, is a formative test. In other words, children could be taking the test in third grade, but they could be starting at a first grade level and answering some questions at a first grade level, and up to a second grade level. Some students might be testing at a third grade, some may be testing at a fifth grade. In other words, the range of ability is reflected in that kind of a test, and it is not a grade level specific where there's only certain questions that are measuring what all students should know at the third grade level, fourth grade level, etc. Those were explicit instructions and regulations that were designed by the federal government. The commissioner cannot make the decision to say, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do our own test. Districts have chosen to use NWEA, and I think it is a wonderful assessment for diagnostic purposes. I think districts should be using other forms of measurement in addition to a systems check. We need to have both, and in the years past, we used to have districts do both, where they would take a norm reference test to see how their kids were doing, normed against other parts of the country, children, and then they would do diagnostic testing similar to what the NWEA reflects. So that is why we developed a criterion reference test, and we follow the federal regulations. With the new administration, we don't know if that kind of thing will change. In answer to, will it be cheaper? It will not be cheaper, because if we go to a formative test, then we will have to develop a statewide formative test that would be aligned to our standards. And so that would take test development, and we would have to spend some additional money changing our test over from a criterion reference to a formative type of assessment. And that's that. And we did propose, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, that we would pay for a formative test for districts and make sure that it was aligned to our standards so that they could have both, that you could really have both if you wanted to. And districts wouldn't have to spend their own money on that, because that is the cost that districts are expending over and above. Districts do not pay for the MCA2 test. That is a test that has been developed and is free, if you will, to our school districts. But if we wanted to do that, it would cost additional money to transfer into that kind of a system. But we cannot do that. Idaho has been mentioned. I want to put this out on the table before somebody raises their hand and says Idaho is doing it. Idaho wanted to do a formative test. They were rejected by the federal government, but they did come back and they did develop a test where they used formative, but for that end of for that final MCA or for the final MCLB test, the federal government required that all students had to have a test within that had the same questions that all kids had to be tested on. And that was what MCLB was based on. And then they have some additional questions at the beginning and the end. What has happened, though, is that when you do that, it kind of then slows down the process of getting feedback quickly, because now you have to wait for that other process to take place for the feedback for the No Child Left Behind portion. So you kind of defeat the kind of the pre and post diagnostic part, because now you've had to stick that MCLB portion in there, which takes time to return the results from. But that is the only state, and that is approved, but they had to actually go back and put test questions in it that only the kids took for the MCLB purposes. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner,
as I hear you respond to Representative Tilbury's question, two questions come to my mind. One, wouldn't the NWEA or similar tests, and I imagine that there's some others out there of similar rigor and quality, satisfy the need for public accountability, tracking of schools, ability to ascertain academic performance, both for the individual and for the school, the district, and the like? So wouldn't NWEA satisfy that? And secondly, isn't your contention that it would actually cost us more money based on the assumption that we would agree to continue under No Child Left Behind? And isn't this a strategy for significantly reducing state and school district costs in K-12 while maintaining a rigorous accountability system?
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair and Representative Dabney, I'm not the testing expert, and we probably should have had our testing expert here. If you run a test that is measuring how well our schools are doing, our school districts, or our system, you really need a test then that is going to measure the same student, or all students are taking the same questions at this, you know, kind of at the same time, if you will, so that you can have a comparison between achievement of school districts and whatever. The diagnostic part is sort of that everyday, how are my kids doing along the school year? And plus it has the stretch of kids that maybe are below grade, two grades below, and kids that are maybe a couple of grades above. So it's kind of the comparison issue that you have to kind of grapple with. All I'm saying about the cost, Representative Dabney, is that if we would flip our system and go to a new assessment system, there's going to be costs inherent in abandoning the old and creating the new. So you may, you're still going to always have to develop test questions from year to year so that you can, you know, do your test. A test is not static. You've got to have test security, et cetera, if you want to have the accountability. So there's still going to always be inherent to your testing system costs that are going to be ongoing. So that, you know, to flip it, you're going to have to account for those costs.
Well, we'll definitely continue this discussion because there are bills coming on this topic, and then you can bring your testing people. But this is a more of a big, higher level committee hearing. But that Representative Tilbury brought up a very good issue because of the cost, people are going to be looking at, isn't there a cheaper way to do all this testing? And again, hopefully we'll get to how much money are we spending and how much staff are deployed with the testing compared to helping districts and so forth. So continue on, Commissioner Segrin.
In goal two, enhancing teacher quality, as I started to mention, we have the math and science academies, and that's where the $3 million came in for the biennium. We also have, through an NGA grant, this was a federal grant, we have created 12 STEM cohort schools, and this really also enhanced our former $2 million grant, where we're really implementing a lot of STEM schools. And this is really good news also for our state, that we've moved so far ahead with implementing STEM kinds of concepts in our high schools. Then we also, today we talked about principal leadership and how important that is for our schools. And we had proposed funding $400,000 last biennium. That was reduced somewhat. The governor will be proposing to fund the $400,000 each year of the biennium. That would train about 100 principals a year, each biennium. And Minneapolis and St. Paul are actually working in coordination with us to actually start training cohorts of their principals so that eventually all of their principals will go through this program. And then we'll have an aspiring principals program, too. So it's really exciting.
We all like that program, and that was kind of my point. If we'd had one evaluation of QCOMP, it wouldn't have had to be cut back.
Okay. Moving on. And goal two, enhancing teacher quality. We also set up a teacher recruitment and retention online center that will allows teachers to post their resumes on this online center, and then also allow school districts to post their openings. And as you can see, we had 17,000 teacher candidate accounts and searches for vacancies, and we had 467 district users that have posted over 3,100 teacher vacancies. So it's a nice way to connect teachers with school districts. We also have a licensure via portfolio process where teachers who maybe are coming from outside of our state or who are maybe mid-career changers and would like to come into the profession can go through a portfolio process and demonstrate that they have the education and the experience to obtain a license in Minnesota. And you can see the statistics there. We recently, you all supported the Board of Teaching asking for a request to actually charge $300 for each portfolio request. Many of our universities charge much more than that for somebody to enter their portfolio process. And it was getting to be very, it's a very time-consuming process. We also ask professors from higher ed institutions to help review these portfolios, so part of that cost would be to help reimburse them for that work. Then we also launched a Mandarin Chinese initiative and an immersion program. If you remember, we had $250,000 per year of the biennium to launch more Mandarin Chinese and other immersion programs. And we now have over 3,000 Minnesota students learning Mandarin Chinese in over 25 public schools and districts. That's double what the number was in just a couple of short years. So we also have made an agreement with China, with the Hanban. That is their overarching, if you will, educational establishment or our bureaucracy that works with the universities, and we have an agreement to have 50 Mandarin Chinese teachers come to our state to teach in our school districts. It's a transitional proposal until we can get more of our own Mandarin Chinese teachers trained in Minnesota. We also will be having our teachers go over to China, so it's an agreement for an exchange, and we're real excited about it.
Question from Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, could you, I want to go back to licensure versus that portfolio. That's very interesting to me. Could you tell me how much was the extended education needed for those, was it 61 applicants? Looks like 61 applicants, or 53 individuals. How much more, just give us a brief a summary of how much more education, what did they need to become licensed to achieve licensure as a qualified, because we know that you know that the teacher really does play a major factor in student achievement. So I'm wondering how much more they need to get.
And Commissioner Segrin, very short answer because that is a policy question.
Madam Chair, and I don't have all the details of that. Many of these teachers are out-of-state teachers who, after the analysis with the portfolio, may have to take a couple of courses, may have to take 10 courses. What we'll do, Representative Ward, is have the Board of Teaching, because we're actually separate agencies, if you will, but we will have them try to give you an analysis if they do have it of once the portfolio was done for these candidates, if they had to go back to school to get more. Or if sometimes they also can demonstrate that they've actually been teaching as a substitute or they have been on a license waiver and they've demonstrated and they have some proof from a school district that they are doing a good job. So it's a very rigorous process, I assure you. Not very many. It looks like all of, 61 came through and 53 made it. But there is also a process where they don't even let some of the people come through the portfolio process.
Representative Wales.
Just very briefly, thank you, Madam Chair. To add to that, I carried this bill last year for the Department of Teaching. Board of Teaching, thank you. And there were instances of people who had done extensive teaching through the Peace Corps and had lots and lots of documentation for all of the training, all of the types of courses they developed. And as the commissioner was saying, this is this is a time-intensive process, and these people are well qualified.
Thank you very much. This committee always wants to do policy. It's more fun, but we're here for finances.
Madam Chair, one of the great things that we financed is the Get Ready, Get Credit initiative, and you all should be very proud of this initiative, too, because we added, I think it was another $4 million each year, the biennium, was it not, to ramp up the number of advanced placement courses that we have in our public high schools, also our international baccalaureate programs, and our college and the schools. And you can look at the statistics, and I will just talk a little bit about the advanced placement. We had an increase, a significant increase in the numbers of students that took advanced placement, but in addition to that, in fact, I think the first year we were actually number one or number two in the nation as far as the increase, the percentage of increase we had in advanced placement. But the neat thing was we also had the largest increase in the number of students that scored a three or better on the advanced placement exams, which then provide the dual credit for them for college and high school. So not only did we increase the numbers of kids, but we also maintained the high level of examination success. The same thing happened with our International Baccalaureate. We now have not only the high school diploma program, but we now have middle year programs and primary year programs that are being developed. And we have, I know, at least two school districts that have become total International Baccalaureate schools. School districts, and that's Fridley, and I think it's, I want to say, St. Louis Park, and maybe it's three. I was going to say South St. Paul. So we may have three districts that have become entire international baccalaureate programs. So regardless of where you come from, where you start, you're going to be an IB student. That's really cool. And then college and the schools, we have 6,074 courses that were taken by high school juniors. 11,000 plus were taken by high school seniors. And this was actually a real strong growth in the college and the schools program, too. So we were very, very pleased with those results and with the appropriation that was given.
Representative Dietrich.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. On the Get Ready, Get Credit, Advanced Placement, International Baccalaureate, is there financing still available in those accounts? Has all of that money been used that was allocated last biennium?
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair and Representative Dietrich, there is some money still available. The difficulty with the advanced placement in the International Baccalaureate program is a lot of that money goes for training, and the training usually takes place in the summertime. So if you're thinking about grabbing that money, I would caution you that you might gut the program then, because the teachers, one of the things that we want to make sure is that the teachers, they have to have some very specific training to teach the advanced placement in the International Baccalaureate program. We have tried to grapple with how you could, you know, make sure that the money does, you know, get out ahead of time, but it's just one of those programs that because of the sequence of when teachers get trained, it's kind of metered out that way.
I think we're going to have to pick up the pace because we really want to get to how much are we spending on each of these goals, how many staff are supporting each of these goals, and those are really big
things.
I'm
going to fly through.
Okay, please. Thank you.
The next one is implementing finance reform and enhancing accountability. I'm not going to talk a lot about the MCA2s, but we did computerize our science test, which does save money because we don't have the paper pencil and the storage and the transportation and all of that. We'd like to eventually move to computerize for all of our school districts. We have the school report card that also gives the demographics and information about how well our kids are doing. Then we also implemented our growth model, which we're really excited about. That gives a picture of how well our kids are doing towards meeting proficiency, to grow towards proficiency. And we've had a lot of wonderful positive feedback about that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we also have the school readiness assessment for our little kids, for our little babies, and how well they are ready for school. And we've established our early childhood council that we're real excited about. And then we also have our regional service cooperatives helping to deliver our AYP support for districts that are not making adequate yearly progress. In regard to our finance reform, we had proposed that we implement a uniform tuition billing system for special education that has been rolling out and has actually, I think, saved a lot of time and money. Remember, I heard the story that I think it was, well, and I'll just say one of our large districts, that they actually paid for one full-time person just to do special ed tuition billing and census is implemented, they now can take that person and put them in the classroom. So that's good news. We also have done a lot of training around our UFARS, EDRS, MARS, and year-end reporting systems to help districts grapple with that. That's a lot of reporting. We're also trying to create a better data warehousing system, IT system, so that districts can save time and money in that area.
I want to point out, excuse me, Commissioner Segrin, that as I said this morning, many of us in this committee would say that the new Minnesota Miracle is comprehensive and systemic and very innovative education finance reform. And I think I may have heard, I'm not sure about you, but some say that there wasn't any reform there. And here I'll just point out that it says implement education finance reform, and it's tuition billing, which is a really good thing, and training in the field. And that is labeled education finance reform. So I'm going to always compare, you know, what's going on for education finance reform. If anyone is maintaining that the new Minnesota Miracle House File 2 is not education finance reform, then this really isn't.
And Madam Chair, I must apologize. When we received your instructions, we were really focused on our agency. Mm-hmm. And when we got to the finance reform, we were thinking you meant what were we doing in our agency to help with the support of finance, you know, reform. So we were looking at it. We were looking at it mentally as, you know, what are the things that we did to help districts understand the finance system and do the training and stuff. So I apologize for that. I will say, and we will be glad to talk to you about that. I think I'm going to be back next week to talk about the governor's budget. I can talk about some of the things we did in 2005 in response to his finance task force. And so I apologize. I know we you mentioned that this morning. I went, oh. We totally interpreted this differently, that what were we doing to support our districts in regard to the finance system that we have, and what were the reform things that we did to help them.
There's plenty of time, so
I apologize. We weren't dodging it. We just misinterpreted your intent. The next thing that we will look at is, if you want to look at some of the unreserved fund balances, we did try to give you some analysis of maybe the condition of school districts, and you can see the graph where in 2001 there was only 8.3% that had an unreserved fund balance, and it went up to 13.5% of their that's unreserved. It was 8.5% of their fund balance was, I'm not saying this right. we have, on average, our districts have about 13.5% of their fund balance in reserve. Back in 2001, it was 8.3%. I hope I'm saying that right, Mr. Melcher. Okay, I am. And then if you look at the numbers of districts and charters who are in SOD, you can see that we have had an improvement in those areas. Representative Ward has a question.
Yes, a question, Madam Chair. Thank you. Commissioner, when you say that the districts have a general fund balance, unreserved fund balance, does that mean $1? Does it mean $1 million? Is there a definition of what that is adequate, or what you're saying? I heard you say 13.5% of the districts or something like that.
I didn't hear that.
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Representative Ward, Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. This is showing that, on the average, school districts currently have a fund balance that's about 13% of their expenditures for the year. So if you think about your budget and how much money you may have saved up in the bank, this is kind of how much you've got in reserve in relation to what you're spending each year. So typically the department has had some general kinds of guidance. We don't have any strict rules in terms of how much fund balance a district has, other than by statute, if a district is in the red by more than 2.5% of their budget for the year, then they're in statutory operating debt and they're required to have a plan to get out of statutory operating debt. Historically, the State Board of Education many years ago had a policy that recommended that school districts maintain a fund balance of about 1 month's expenditure. So that would be in the 10 to 12% range. So what we're looking at here is that school districts, on the average, back in 2001, had fund balances that were a little lower than what the State Board recommended years and years ago when they were making recommendations on those sorts of things. And the fund balance situation has improved on the average. And today, the fund balance of 13.5% is kind of where we think the districts ought to be in terms of having some reserves to deal with uncertainties in terms of their revenues and expenditures. And the lower chart says that when we look at the districts that are in difficulty, the top chart is averages, the bottom chart is those that are in difficulty. What this is saying is that both in the case of charter schools and in the case of traditional school districts, that we have fewer districts that are in financial difficulty than we had back in 2001. So instead of having 9.9% of school districts that are in statutory operating debt, we're now down to 3.8% of the districts that are in the red and are working their way out of deficit. So that's good news, and to some small extent, some of the training that the department does may have helped. I know that for new charter schools coming in, we require them to do their planning earlier. There's a longer time frame, and in some cases, charter schools have gotten into some financial difficulty where they didn't have a good budget plan, and perhaps, not that the department should take credit for this, but that there may have been some improvement in that as a result of work at the department, as well as a lot of work by very strong people out in the districts and the charter schools.
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Melcher, on the fund balance, does that vary by size of school, by the district size? And I'm thinking, okay, Hennepin, it seems to me we've got about a 5.5% reserve, which would last us about 12 days.
Mm-hmm.
So are the larger districts, do they tend to have smaller reserves?
Dr. Melcher.
So that this figure would be skewed if you add in all the small districts.
Dr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Representative, I think you're probably right that the fund balances probably are a little bit lower in the largest districts as opposed to the smaller districts. I think we could very easily do a run that would give you the details and break it down by size of district. I think if you have a very tiny school district, it may be more critical for them to have a higher percentage fund balance, just simply because the budget is so small. One kind of error can create a bigger problem for the district in balancing its budget, but we'd be happy to provide information breaking down the size of fund balances by size of districts.
Back to the department. Commissioner Segrin.
Thank you. The department is sectioned into three main offices. Office of Academic Excellence, Office of Accountability and Improvement, and Office of Student Support Services. Now we're going to go into our agency historical funding. You can see from fiscal year 2000 to 2009 are projected. We started in 2000 with $32 million approximately in our general fund, and now we are down to $19.8 million.
And Commissioner Segrin, Mr. Strom tells us it was 2005 was the big year for children, families, and learning going back to Department of Education. So how much of the change from 32 down to that 22 was
Madam Chair, as I understand these calculations, we took that out so that this is without that included. So from 2000 down to 2009, that was removed so that we saw a true value.
This is apples to apples.
This is apples
Wonderful.
To apples.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then you can see just the FTE state counts and the FTE non-state counts. Now the FTE non-state counts accounts for not only federal, but it also accounts for some maybe special grants or something that we would get that would add some temporary FTE.
But apples to apples.
This is apples to apples again.
Excellent.
And again, you can see from 1999, just because our state funds have declined, we're down from almost 100 employees. In that 10-year period of time. Our federal programs have gained somewhat, about 27, but that's fairly flat. We had certainly some infusion of some federal monies from time to time, Title I, No Child Left Behind. Some of that is reflected in some smaller amounts of money that we may have gotten to do, you know, testing, et cetera. But that's overall what we've done. And our agency budget in the next slide, you can look at for the 2009, well, last year, you instructed us to reduce our budget by $842,000. And
it's the governor's recommendation.
Yeah, okay. And well, thank you, both you and the governor, for that. share the pain, please. And you can see how we took those reductions. We took that out of salaries and benefits, and mainly through attrition. Those that possibly retired or left, we tried to, not lay off people if we could. We reduced our professional and technical contracts, travel, communications, and supplies, printing, and other. And we have done some. We tried to do some things in our agency as far as looking at printers, copiers, that kind of thing. We reduced all of that all over our agency. We tried to streamline, how we're using our technology so that it is more fiscally responsible.
Hey, Mr. Speaker, did that have any unintended consequences, taking the layoffs through attrition? Were there any particularly hard-hit areas, or did you reassign people to fill in those holes?
I would say I'd have to go back and look at the people that, potentially left and we didn't fill their positions, or it took a while before, we could do that. I think generally where we have, wanted to beef up our programming is in the school improvement and support services such as that.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot of needs all over. But I also will say that I think we have been as responsive as we absolutely can, and I think that our turnaround time for requests by our district still stays within about a week. If not, and if it's urgent, we try to get something, an answer to a district within 24 hours if it's an urgent request. So even though we have reduced, we are still trying to maintain our services and support to our school districts, but it is more difficult. Probably if you ask each of the assistant commissioners, they would each say that there are areas that we wish we had a few more staff so that we made sure that we were supporting folks in a more robust way. We can always, all of us know that we can always have more support.
Question from Representative Anderson. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. That budget reduction of $807,000, what percentage is that of your overall budget?
Commissioner Segrin.
Well, that was, I think that was 2%. It was about, it was 2%.
Representative Anderson, follow up? That was it, okay.
And then we had, of course, then we had the unallotment process that just happened a couple of months ago. And we were instructed to unallot $1.6 million out of our budget. And that was where the salary savings, we again tried to just hold current positions vacant. We didn't fill vacant positions for savings, so ongoing we won't hire new people. We also had printing, travel. You can see the kinds of things that we did. We also pay, especially for, let's say, when we're doing our standards development, when we're developing new standards, we use a lot of teachers from the field that come in, and we pay their travel expenses, and, if they have to stay overnight, or if it's not, most of the time they don't have to do that, but travel and food, et cetera. And we use a lot of teachers for many, many things, and we really appreciate that. But again, as we get further and further into, what we have to reduce, then some of that, becomes necessary to not even be able to rely on that.
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Segrin, as you look at the budget this year, has the governor instructed the departments or agencies to look at zero-based budgeting, or is that something that you may have taken on your own?
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair, and yes, the governor hasn't specifically said look at zero-based budgeting, but that's what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
We have been doing that for a long time because we have to look at what are our necessary services and priorities that we have to get done, and then we look back at all of our programs and say which programs can we no longer do, or are they're not the highest priority. So we are prioritizing, and we are doing that. We can't do it any other way. We are constantly re-examining how we can be more efficient, streamline our processes, work across divisions. We're doing everything we can. If we can use federal monies for both state and federal, programs, we try to even, do that. But sometimes the federal monies are very restricted to just, certain duties. But yes, we are doing all that we can.
Yeah, and that's a really good question. You know, a lot of legislators have said, let's do zero-based budgeting. And we actually discussed it with Mr. Marks and others. And really, in the short amount of time that state legislators have, we've been told that, you know, even where they've tried it, it's been a big failure. Only the department and the agencies have the time and the staff to do it. So it's very good news. We look forward to your recommendations that you've had a chance to do that. We could have time to do, you know, a department and drill down, they told us, or do priority-based budgeting, but the real zero-based budgeting only you can do. So it's very good to hear that you're doing it so you can make recommendations to
us. You really do have to just, you know, build your base from what you need to do. And we have things that we have to do. We have to get the money out the door to the school district, so that's our finance department. I don't think you want to eliminate Mr. Melcher.
No, we don't.
You know, we have to do special education, and that's mainly federal. We have to do No Child Left Behind. We certainly, you know, have a lot of, you know, other compliance types of services that we have to, that are state mandated, and then we have our programs that we, you know, want to support, and we want to certainly look at closing the achievement gap, and we have our gifted programs and our others that we want to maintain, and so our standards development. Those are all ongoing processes that we have to continually do. So we're pretty much at the priorities that we have to do, and we will continue to do our best in that area. Just the challenges ahead, I just want to mention that we do have a significant budget deficit, but we shouldn't retrench on our reforms, and the key to our state's future is tied to, you know, K-12 education. In 1950, 80% of our jobs were unskilled, and in today's world, 85% of them are skilled jobs. So we've had such a huge sea change in the, you know, the last 50 years with education, and so our teachers are facing new educational challenges. Our students have to be educated at higher levels. And we can't go back on our aspirations and our goals. We have to keep moving forward. We know that so many of our jobs are going to be based on this higher knowledge that is going to be required. If you just look at the stats, just in two short years, some of the top 10 in-demand jobs haven't even been created. Just think about that. From 2004, in 2 years, there are going to be new jobs that we don't even know that will exist, and yet we're going to have to provide our students with transferable types of skills so they'll be prepared. And those skills have a base of math and science understanding in them. And this one blows me away because I've got students or kids that are approaching these ages, and yes, I am old, that 10 to 14 jobs by the time you're age 38. I do know that some of my children's friends have already had 5 to 6 jobs, and it just blows me away. But again, we have to prepare our kids for that. And then we also know that at least a fifth to a third of our jobs are going to have some kind of scientific and technological knowledge. So we have to kind of keep charging ahead. The challenges are big, but I'm not discouraged. I have a lot of hope that, you know, with your support and working together, we can get through this deficit and we can come out stronger and continue our good work. Just mention, you know, we mentioned Robert Mazzano a lot, and the effectiveness of teachers. We're committed to supporting our teachers in the classroom. We know that over a third of our teachers leave in 5 years, and that we've got about a 40% or more retirement rate coming in the next 10 to 12 years. And so we've got some challenges ahead in replacing our teachers, and we want to do a good job of that. Some of our initiatives that we're looking at in the future are looking at some of the Teaching Transformation Act. We'll talk about that next week and some of the things the governor is proposing. But I think the nice thing that we need to remember is that we are making progress, and not to forget that and not to become discouraged. And when you read, our fourth graders in 2007 recorded the third largest gain in math in the history of the TIMSS assessment when compared to fourth graders in 1995. That's huge. And as I said, we should have a parade down Nicola Avenue, and I wish our reporters and our news people would pay more attention to what's going on, because we are doing some really good work. Star Tribune said, too, keep going. Don't give up. We must use the lessons learned from TIMS to reach more students. So we need to keep continuing improving instruction. Again, we want to maintain high expectations. We're doing we have a technical grant that is helping us, and Representative Greiling, you alluded to kind of the grad conversation. We do have a small group of legislators and others that are looking at a solution, short-term and some long-term. It's going to provide us with an opportunity to have that good discussion, and we're looking forward to working with all of you on that. We also are doing some what we call scaling up of evidence-based practice. And we have had work on dropout prevention and also on positive behavior intervention strategies that are best practices. And we are trying to use those practices to scale them up all over the state. And if we can do this successfully, then we can start implementing other initiatives that we know work, that research tells us work. So we got a grant to work on that. And then, again, I mentioned the Teaching Transformation Act. We'll talk about that next week. And then continuing our work on supporting teachers through QCOM for our academies and other things.
Okay, thank you very, very much. And do you have any information on, we wanted to know how much of the age, you had the four goals. Mm-hmm. And given that we hear a lot of input that too much is spent on testing, and we will be having the bills coming forward that Representative Tillsbury brought up that topic. Do you have any breakdown of how much of the department's funding and FTEs are dedicated to each of the four goals? And if not, we really would like to have that information as soon as possible.
Madam Chair, Ms. Webber,
members of the committee,
we do not have that specific information available. As the commissioner mentioned early on, we did not specifically set up our budget aligned to the various goals. We do have divisions within our department, and we can give you a general fund amount that is applied to each of those divisions, as well as an FTE mm-hmm. count.
That would be
I do have a rough estimate on the assessment budget, but I'd prefer to give you the actual accurate information about how much of our general fund budget goes to the assessment division. One thing to note with the assessment costs is that there is a separate appropriation that is not included in our general fund budget, and then it primarily is used for the contractor that we've hired through an RFP process to implement the assessment, to develop and implement the assessment system in Minnesota.
Thank you, Ms. Webber. And we would like to see, you know, when we got our advice from former Governor Arne Carlson, I think he actually was making the case that the mission, you know, should be supported by goals, as you clearly have, and that, but that the budget then should be lined up under the goals, and that the staff would be deployed based on the goals. And some have said that legislators should have a better handle on what are those goals, and some states actually put it into statute as to what the goal should be, so that it's not just one branch of government, but actually all three that are helping to decide what those goals are. So we perked up our ears and we're very interested in that. But right now we're just asking for what is the status quo in terms of, if your budget isn't lined up that way, I guess I would encourage it to be lined up that way. But in the meanwhile, as best as you can separate it out, we would like that. And then also the separate budget line item for assessments, if you could include that in there as well. So I think that will be part of our budget deficit discussion. And when we look at how the department is funded in terms of staff, you know, we're very much wanting the department to be helping and not punitive and that sort of thing. So if the staff is too thin in the area of being able to help, you mentioned a week to get back to districts, but maybe there's proactive help as well. You know, when there's something new we're asking districts to do, like the uniform billing or the UFARS training, but maybe having to do with academics as well, we could work with you to see, are we doing a good enough job with that, with all the things we expect? And that's the kind of thing that we're interested in with that question. So we'll look forward to getting that from you. And Representative Ann Zells has a question. Thank and we you, have Madam five Chair. More minutes if anyone else has questions. Representative Ann Zells.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Real quick. Commissioner, you know better than most around here how difficult this really and truly is going to be. And we're going to be making decisions based on outcomes. And for me, a lot of my decisions are going to be based on numbers, how many school districts have been provided X number of hours worth of technical assistance. We're going to need to know matching up your three bullets on your slide here. Just how many, your three offices. We're going to need to know full-time positions devoted to each of those offices, school district contacts, technical assistance. I'm particularly interested in where we are with Native American education and technical assistance to local school districts in that area. And lastly, you rightfully take credit for a lot of great things that a lot of great school districts and teachers and superintendents and school boards are doing, and that's good. But what jumps out at me is that we're still facing a graduation rate of approximately 50% for African American students, despite No Child Left Behind and all those lofty platitudes. So I'd like to know a little bit about what your plan is in allocating resources to that population.
Commissioner Segrin.
And Madam Chair, just to respond on how many hours of technical assistance by school district, that really depends on the need of the school district. I mean, we have some school districts that never ask for a technical assistance. But if you're talking about the dissemination of to all school districts of certain processes that may have changed and how we're doing that, we'll try to get that. I don't know if we track that finitely. In regard to the different divisions, we will absolutely do that. But I also want to just give you a cautionary note. As commissioner, I've also been encouraging our divisions to work across divisions on certain things. For example, the achievement gap. We may have special ed federal staff that are working on response to intervention, but so would our school improvement division and others. And so as we're doing that, it may, we can make a nice, neat little chart and show you, but I want to assure you that a lot of this work is going on. I don't want us to be in silos either, because sometimes when we start doing that, we're never, we're not cross-fertilizing, if you will, each other's knowledge. So I want to just caution you on that, too, that we are trying to do a lot of cross-training and also just cross-support with one another, with each other's knowledge. And then the grad rate, I mentioned just very briefly our scaling up initiative. And we received money from a federal grant about three, I think, years ago that looked at dropout prevention, which has to do with, trying to keep kids in school and have a higher graduation rate. And we are looking, it's been highly successful where it was implemented in the school districts. And the scaling up initiative is taking that framework of dropout prevention and trying to scale it up across our school districts. And we're trying to figure out how we can do that and how we can implement that. So we're hoping these are some, other, we're constantly looking at strategies for improving those things. So I want to assure you that we are doing everything we can to address this. It's continually frustrating to me. I hate to be responding, about the achievement gap year after year after year. Yes, we're doing great, but we still have a large achievement gap. Yes, we're doing great, but. So we're trying to do everything we can to work with that. And Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So just a quick question. The statistic on the number of teachers leaving the field within 5 years to me is alarming. And I don't know if there's any statewide exit polls, but what are the reasons that they're leaving that fast?
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair, they're varied. I think sometimes the private sector is so competitive that they'll start out with a sort of a relatively low beginning salary compared to the private sector, but teachers don't necessarily go in for the money. They become overwhelmed pretty quickly if they don't have mentoring support. Sometimes they're placed in the hardest to teach classrooms because others have, quote, paid their dues. Other teachers have paid their dues. So now you get to, you know, have the challenges. There's varied reasons. Some of it is just private sector competitiveness. Sometimes it is that lower starting salary. Sometimes it's just that they're overwhelmed. But we're hearing more that it's that they get put in a school district or a site or a classroom, and they're just not supported. And if we could figure out the mentoring and induction piece and keep more teachers in, I think that would alleviate it. And, in fact, we did have a mentoring proposal, I think it was in 2005, to actually work with Education Minnesota. It was a great program, and unfortunately, you know, there were other priorities that came forth, and we didn't fund that. But that's, I think, one of the key things is to get that mentoring piece in place.
Thank you very much, Mr. Segrin, Ms. Weber, Dr. Melcher. I think it's been a good discussion. We'll look forward to the rest of the information. Before I adjourn the meeting, members, Robbie LaFleur from the Legislative Reference Library is inviting everybody that didn't earlier see the birthday celebration. They're turning 40. And so from 3 to 5, it's been started, but it goes on for the next 45 minutes. They have treats, coffee, exhibits, and cake. So make your way up to the 6th floor if you have time. Meeting's adjourned.